live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting but not video streaming from our studio in New York City. I'd like to welcome all of you. We have people in 140 countries listening right now. We try to address all the major issues that impact us: health and nutrition, environmental, important social issues, especially from a progressive point of view, and then unique guests. Today, you'll see we cover all that. An in-depth analysis today of what would happen if we simply got off meat and went vegan, to the environment and to global warming. Also, the newest study, an in-depth study on sugar and Alzheimer's. Well, before you get to Alzheimer's, you have dementia. Before you get to dementia, you have memory loss. Before you get there, you have memory inflammation or brain inflammation, all from sugar. That'll be an in-depth discussion today. My guest in the second part of our program is a Nobel laureate. He is Professor Henry Pollack. He won the Nobel Prize along with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for talking about the environment. He is a professor emeritus of geophysics, University of Michigan. He has taught there for over 40 years. Now, we're getting him an exclusive interview, his first, since returning just a few days ago from the Antarctica and the Arctic. Now, here's what came out this morning. Quote, Arctic sea ice will reach the final collapse within 3 to 4 years. If you remember when I began my series on the 12 tipping points, leading to what will be a series of documentaries on the environment, but those are the end ones in this current cycle I'm doing. I have about 6 before I get there. So figure about 2 years. I was telling you that virtually every expert that I had filmed and interviewed said that we are in chaos theory, meaning there is no accurate mathematical model to predict anything at this moment. Not volcanoes, not earthquakes, certainly not global warming, not extreme weather patterns. These are going to happen now no matter what we do. 2 of the 12 have tipped, so they're not going to be corrected. That's why we're seeing these extreme patterns. However, others can be impacted. Therefore, we should be doing, well, what we might call a Marshall Plan to reverse this. I said that you've got to pay attention to the Arctic, because when that ice is gone in the summertime, that directly impacts a current, and that current carries water, cold water in one direction, warm water in another direction. That's a belt, an energy belt. What happens when that's disrupted? We're going to ask our Professor Henry Pollack that today. So they had predicted it would be 100 years before the Arctic would be ice-free. Now it's 3 years. So what they were predicting is now happening in record time. So they were all wrong. All of them were wrong. Every expert was wrong. And now we have to have a whole new way of looking at where we're going to live and how we're going to produce food and where our water is going to come from and what it means if at one time we were in a perfect environment, but now because of what's happening with the weather, it may be a terrible environment, including drought. So all this we'll discuss with my guest. Then today, I want to take direct issue with virtually 90% of the American media. I don't like the American media. I don't like it because I see what it has become. Either it is afraid to take on the hard stories, they're afraid to go up against the big boys because they get smacked down. Funding can be taken away from ads on their television or radio or magazine stations. So they self-censor. Or, like the Washington Post and the New York Times, they don't self-censor. They simply give you a biased perspective. But what happens when we're told that we have a serious crisis with Iran and its nuclear energy program and therefore allow all the mainstream media to be used on Sunday for the really radicalized, in my personal opinion, sociopathic Netanyahu and his absolutely dysfunctional, an extremely aggressive group in Israel to try to provoke the United States, Congress, and public into insisting that a preemptive strike against Iran is the right thing to do. So I'm going to go through the myths that the major media did not address, and of course Netanyahu wasn't about to touch. The top myths about Iran's nuclear enrichment program, and show you we do not have anything to fear, nor does Israel. But boy, if they strike it, it'll be World War III. And then watch how all those very same Americans who chose not to do their homework respond when they're paying $15 for a gallon of gas and $8 for a loaf of bread. Remember, everything has to travel to get to where you're at. So that means the food and building materials has to come either by rail or truck or plane or boat. All that requires oil, diesel, gas. And that's just going to go through the roof. So I'll talk about that. Then I'm very concerned on a social issue. And I will share Paul Buchheit's 5 looming curses of privatization. Why I believe we should not privatize anything more. In fact, if anything, if legally possible, we should get out of the contracts that have been signed, because you will not like the consequences. And I'll go through the 5 worst things that major corporations sitting on $2 trillion want to do with both the Clinton or Mitt Romney White Houses in order to buy our private and privatize our public property, our water, transportation. I'll go through those. So we deal with social issues, and for all of you who are just joining us for the first time, and by the way, the numbers are really, really good. How many people every day turn on and listen? And they let us know, and then we, through Google Analytics, have a way of determining something about the people listening. They want to know on these issues, health, social issues, environment, and what we can do about it. Let's begin. For those of you who know someone who wants to give up cigarette smoking and is having a hard time, there's good news, and this is from recent research in Ayurvedic and Indian herbal medicine, talking about different supplements, natural herbal supplements, that can reduce or replace the cigarette craving and helps them kick the habit. Let me spell this for you. Mu, M-U, Kuna, C-U-N-A, Mucuna. You can also call it velvet bean. It's of big interest for all the millions of smokers who want to quit but can't handle the first 2 or 3 weeks of how they feel, their mood swings, their withdrawal, their cravings. Well, the L-DOPA content of the raw, unprocessed mucuna bean powder is so strong that doctors are able to help people with Parkinson's restore mental clarity. It is a phenomenal mood elevator for people who are depressed. And this newest study shows it can help the people who need to be off cigarettes. The velvet bean contains a substantial amount of L-DOPA. Now, L-DOPA is an amino acid which converts into dopamine. And most commonly, you find this as, let's say, over the internet, and it's in a lot of vegetarian capsules. It's used substantially in Ayurvedic medicine. It's known by many names: sea beans, buffalo beans, dopa beans, cowhich. And the main medicinal benefits comes from the seeds, but the pod and the roots are also used. And the velvety beans are actually drift seeds, meaning they can float away on ocean currents and replant themselves all over the world. So it's good for those who try to stop smoking, but there's other things it does as well. It dramatically strengthens your immune system. It improves your sleep. It reduces cellulite and fat. It improves skin appearance. It increases your mood and sense of well-being. It's very good if you are lacking bone density, if you suffer from osteoporosis and you need to increase the density of the bone, and it helps regeneration of organs like your heart, kidney, and lungs. And so that's why I would recommend it. Okay? Next up, for those of you who are having your children vaccinated, I don't tell you to vaccinate or not. I simply show you the scientific studies that offer legitimate challenges from the peer-review independent literature, not the vaccine industry-backed scientific research, which was almost always fraudulent. The latest coming from Victoria Moore of Natural News, quote, "The choice to vaccinate is a very important and complex decision in which parents must take the responsibility to try to find enough information to make an educated decision that can affect their children for the rest of their lives. As a parent, this decision can be overwhelming, and many trust their doctors to act in the parent's best interest to provide guidance in such instances. Unfortunately, there is a major distortion of information out there, and many people have the misconception that vaccines result in healthier children. However, research is showing that vaccinated children are more chronically ill than their non-vaccinated counterparts. According to the CDC, the number of vaccines that are given to children has increased more than 300% in the last 29 years. In 1983, children were given 10 shots from birth to age 6. Today, they're given 38 shots for the same age. Vaccines can carry with them very serious side effects, ranging from mild complications such as fever or rash to major issues such as seizure and death. Children who are lucky enough to evade any major difficulties can carry with them health problems that will last the rest of their lives. According to a survey on vaccineinjury.info, vaccinated children have a much higher rate of autism, ear infections, ADHD, asthma, and allergies. And I would add to that, what I have seen is I went back in the scientific literature and we looked at over 2,000 studies. And we found that prior to the mass immunization schedules, starting in the 1990s, early 90s, juvenile diabetes or type 1 diabetes was not an exceptional situation. It was rare. Today, it's very common. I believe that a diabetes type 1 is due in part to the vaccinations. In any case, what we're finding is that the assessment was that you have 30% higher problems with these illnesses in children who are vaccinated. And the assessment continues to show that unvaccinated children were less likely to suffer from hyperactivity, skin disorders, autism, autoimmune disorders, depression, anxiety, many conditions. In addition to the fact that they were being shown to cause health problems, vaccines that are being given today have not been tested for long-term safety. None of them have, not one. Most of the studies only evaluate side effects that occur within 48 to 72 hours. Well, here's what you should know. I have just completed the principal photography over a two-year period with 47 of the world's leading authorities on vaccination and immunology. All of them, when asked, said that many of the effects of the vaccine will not show themselves for weeks or months. So what about this 48 hours to 72 hours? They said it's absolute nonsense. So what it means is that if you should end up with a problem, and if your problem occurs after 72 hours, you're told that it had nothing to do with the vaccine. This is so unscientific. How did this happen? Simple. The manufacturers of the vaccines, which are major pharmaceutical giants, spend money on foundations and think tanks. They get to deduct this from their profits. They then hire scientists or fund departments in universities who then speak on their behalf. So when you have a professor at a major university, including Ivy League universities, and especially Ivy League universities, appear in the media or before a congressional hearing or a state hearing and saying, well, these vaccines are safe and necessary, and those people who would challenge them are simply fearmongers. You'll never know that that person's funding came from the vaccine maker because how it's filtered and how it becomes opaque. But that's what we have found. Remember this. All vaccines are nothing more than a combination of different toxic additives and preservatives and cell types that are initiated during the manufacturing process. There is no such thing as a non-contaminated vaccine. They are all contaminated. The problem is that the shots create a temporary vaccine-induced antibody production rather than what those of us like myself, baby boomers who got measles, who got chickenpox, and letting the body build up its natural immune system. And therefore, you never get that disease again the rest of your life. And when you get it, it's generally very mild. But they don't have evidence of their effectiveness in any given individual. As Mike Adams reported back in April, and we just filmed Mike, whooping cough outbreaks are much higher in areas that have a higher percentage of children who took the whooping cough vaccine. Over-vaccinating weakens the immune system, making children more susceptible to infections with less ability to fight them off. The injections are also able to promote viral adaptation, which is responsible for creating vaccine-resistant superbugs. By the way, to tell you how common this is in 2010, 77% of the over 1,000 people who were infected with mumps had received the MMR vaccine, a statistic which conveniently left unreported by the mainstream media. So while the number of outbreaks occurs, the medical establishment can recommend more vaccines to try to reduce the numbers, causing a vicious cycle, fueling the misinformation deception. So in conclusion, I'm not going to tell you to vaccine or not. I have my third major feature film coming out. I've written 21 articles on it. They're all there free up on our website, progressiveradionetwork.com or garynall.com. You can read these for yourself. They are all fully, fully scientifically sourced and vetted by our scholars and residents who work in my office every day of the week at 83rd and Broadway. I believe that healthier options to inoculations, including eating organic food, increasing vitamin D intake, avoiding all GMO foods and additives and preservatives, diet is a very important part of making sure that our bodies are able to work effectively. The food's highest in refined sugars and other additives require our body to use stored vitamins and minerals in order to metabolize and increasing the production of hormones, which suppresses our immune system. Juicing and eating healthy and lots of raw food, that's the way you fight infections. But then again, that's my position. Now, going over to an article that Jeremy and I wrote last week and posted, which shows you the complete deception behind the latest Stanford so-called review on organic versus regular food and saying they're the same. And we proved by citing peer-reviewed literature all the studies showing organic had more nutrients, plus all the dangers of pesticides that are used on regular food. And now we've added in there who was behind it, who actually funded it. Something the mainstream media did not bother to ask nor find. So I ask you, read the article and spread it. Share it on your links to as many people as you have that you can reach out to. Let them know this is just one example of how the GMO industry is so afraid of the upcoming vote in California that they're willing to do anything, including massive multi-million-dollar PR misinformation and disinformation campaigns. We, on the other hand, we who want GMO food either banned or labeled, and that's what the rule in California will be, labeled, we want to say yes to that. We don't have those resources. Jeffrey Smith, who is, in my opinion, a real hero on this issue, is out in California now spreading the word. We have our documentary coming out this Friday, going directly to the internet and to the people in California. Over the next 6 weeks, every week, a different film will go out for six straight weeks, six straight films over the internet on genetically engineered food. My hope is that these films will be the tools that can educate people and spread them. We have a lot of people. We have hundreds of thousands listening now in California. Come next Friday, and over the weekend, you'll be able to download these. Share them with people. Get them into as many places as you possibly can. All of it is fully documented. We have a whole team that reviews every documentary I do. We have a team of lawyers. We have a team of scholars. We have outside critics. That is done with every single film, book, article prior to its release. Because we know that since there's so many people who are listening and reading and watching, that we have to go above and beyond what any other standard is of objectivity and accuracy. Here's the latest from Jonathan Benson. Quote, major food and biotechnology corporations like Cargill and Monsanto really do not want to see genetically modified food labeling laws passed this fall in California or anywhere else for that matter, which is why they are continuing to hire corrupt scientists, researchers, and university academics to flesh out phony studies that make the implication that GMO labeling will create a type of food apocalypse in which nobody will be able to afford basic food essentials because of their exorbitant cost. The latest bit of propaganda pushing such nonsense comes out of the University of California, Davis, where two professors recently put out an industry-funded study that claims that California's Proposition 37 ballot measure, which will require labeling of GMOs at the retail level, will cost the food industry more than $1 billion, and this increased cost, they claim, will ultimately lead to higher food costs for consumers. Entitled The Costly Regulation with No Benefits, the 48-page spin piece uses scare tactics and fear, but not an ounce of actual science to suggest that GMO labeling will hurt both farmers and the food industry. It also makes a number of patently false claims, including that GMO labeling, quote, will not provide any meaningful benefits in the form of improved product safety, end quote, even though GMOs have been shown to cause allergy, sterility, organ damage, and many other serious problems. Yep, that's right. So once again, they're using a university and getting their word out. We're not going to be able to trust the media to get ours out. So work with each other on this. Next up, plant phytonutrients shown to alter genes that halt cancer metastasis. Now, this is important. Why? Because every time you have any form of plant, you're bringing into your body hundreds if not thousands of natural chemicals that are beneficial to our health and help prevent chronic diseases from heart attack to diabetes and cancer. There's probably at least another 50% or higher that have never been identified that are also in there that we'll find work synergistically with existing phytonutrients to help turn off inflammation and promote healing. A research team from Washington State University has published the result of a study in the journal Cancer Metastasis Reviews that shows how more than 40 plant-based compounds have been identified that can turn on genes known to slow the spread of cancer. That's really important because that's what many of us in this field have been saying for decades. Phytonutrients, your greens, your chlorella and spirulina, and wheatgrass, and barley greens, and alfalfa, and Swiss chard. These are the things, and broccoli, these are the things that can prevent or slow down and stop the spread of cancers. The lead author, Dr. Gary Meadows, showed how the nutrients can prevent the deadly spread of cancer cells or metastasis rather than traditional work on the prevention and treatment of cancer's tumors. Here's what he said, quote, there are lots of magic bullets out there in what we eat and associated with our lifestyle. We just need to take advantage of those, and they can work together, end quote. Well, for those of you who are taking your vegetables and eating them, my hope is 11 servings of fresh organic vegetables and fruits per day, or taking at least one tablespoon of your fruit or vegetable powders, which are giving you thousands of these chemicals working together, you're doing the right thing. You're just ahead of the curve. I'm Gary Knoll. In about 10 minutes from now, we'll be going to my guest. I want to go to some other issues first. And then we'll have our talk back segment. And then we'll hear. First, I want to talk about why I'm against and Paul Buchheit is against privatization. Just take a look around. Almost every town in America is suffering from financial short draws for a simple reason. Most of the state and county taxes come from property taxes or business taxes. And when businesses go out of business, which they are, and when homeowners lose the value in their property, the property taxes go down. Therefore, there's less money for them to function. Well, in the salad days, they overbuilt and overgrew their bureaucracies. They had so much money coming in, they just kept funding every kind of project imaginable, some of value and some not. But now, they're all broke. So in comes the private financial industry. And they're saying, hey, look, we will partner with you. We know that you don't have money, and we can do it better. So that's what they try to make us believe. They only have one interest, getting a contract that gives them like 100 years to lease something, and then they take it over, and always it's worse. They're profiteers. Here are five looming curses of privatization from Paul Buchheit. One, public treasurers sold off for short-term budget needs. And what's this mean? For example, do you remember when President Bush proposed auctioning 300,000 acres of national forest in 41 states? But the Reagan administration and Clinton administration also tried to privatize public land. Now there's the Cato Institute and other libertarian groups are pressing for property deals. They simply want to have what they call allocated to the highest value use. What that means in lay language is whoever bids the most gets to buy it and gets to use it in whatever way they want, whether it's gas hydrofracking or any other use. That brings us up to Paul Ryan's dubiously named Path to Prosperity, which proposes to sell millions of acres of what he calls unneeded federal land and billions of dollars worth of federal assets. He's starting in his own backyard. The state of Wisconsin is considering the sale of the DNR land for some ready cash. The Path to Prosperity is based in part on Republican Jason Chaffetz's Disposable of Excess Federal Land Act of 2011, which would unload millions of acres of land in America's West. And worse yet is Representative Cliff Stearns' perplexing recommendations to, quote, sell off some of our national parks. Mitt Romney also chimed in, admitting that he didn't know, quote, what the purpose of is public lands. I'm sure you didn't, Mitt. But then again, I don't think you know a lot about anything. But that's just my own personal subjective opinion. And by the way, I also heard from the Andy Bortz report today that in order to help Mitt Romney's campaign to ensure victory in his presidential contest, he will undergo a procedure to have his mouth wired shut as of today. The decision reportedly was made in response to the release earlier yesterday of a rare video showing Mr. Romney saying what he really thought. In the video, Romney blasts the American people for being, quote, insanely obsessed with food, clothing, and shelter, end quote, and asserts that many of them, quote, are too lazy to hide their money overseas, end quote. At another point in the video, Mr. Romney refers to his own hard childhood, say, quote, I never had anything in life given to me. If I wanted to cut a gay guy's hair off, I had to pin him to the ground myself. And we're sure you did, Mitt. So Mitt doesn't understand what we need parks for. Yosemite National Park, Grand Teton Park. No, I'm sure he doesn't, because he probably owns his own national park. Number two, infrastructure decaying in the hands of profit seekers. Now, this is bad. David Clay Johnson describes the deteriorating state of America's infrastructure. You all know. You've seen it. You've seen the problems in New York City with the aging gas mains and the water mains that are 60 to 80 years old. You saw the bridge that collapsed a couple of years ago. Well, look at our grids and our pipelines. They've been neglected by the very industries that cut costs rather than provide maintenance. Meanwhile, they achieve profit margins of over 50%, which is just mind-numbing. The government agencies that are usually blamed for the crumbling infrastructure are often staffed with regulators from the very industries they're expected to monitor. And it's getting worse as corporations become fewer and more powerful. Almost every American adult can relate to the monopolistic phone and internet industry that controls our public airwaves. According to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, South Korea has internet speeds 200 times faster than the average speed in the United States at half the cost. So, their free market enterprise is simply not working in the United States telecommunications industry. Then we have water. For me, that's a big issue. Looking for property that where you own the water rights and you own the mineral rights and you test that water and you see that you have unlimited aquifer, that's a big plus. But according to Food and Water Watch, quote, the finance industry is promoting water privatization as a way to help local governments pay for budget shortfalls and improvement projects, end quote. Now, the chief economist of Citigroup concurred, quote, I expect to see a globally integrated market for fresh water within 25 years, end quote. But while profits average 15% per year, water and sewer utility rates typically rise 63%. Short-term business ventures are subject to abandonment after just a few years, and desperate local governments often regret their hasty decisions. A Century Foundation report concluded that with privatization, quote, competition is hard to create and maintain. Cost savings, if any, from privatization erode over time, and service quality often suffers, end quote. Now, there are numerous examples of water privatization abuse that have been documented in Pennsylvania and California. The American Water Company took over towns and raised rates 70%. In Atlanta, United Water Services demanded more money from the city while promoting federal complaints about water quality. In Felton, California, privatized its water and received a 74% proposed rate increase right away. Coatesville, Pennsylvania, saw an 85% increase in the water. Shell owns groundwater rights in Colorado. Oil tycoon T. Boone Pickens is buying up water in drought-stricken Texas, and water in Alaska is being pumped into tankers and sold in the Middle East. In another ominous note of the future, the House passed the Clean Water Cooperative Federalization Act of 2011, which would deny the Environmental Protection Agency the right to enforce the Clean Water Act. Our water is getting dirtier and scarier. But a hedge fund advisor put a capitalist spin on it, noting that, quote, serious profit opportunities in water if you play it right. The result of this impending water crisis can be very good. Yeah, it can. If you own the water, we have to drink, so you can charge us anything you want or do what they do in South America. You put a water meter on everyone's home. If you don't get your money, then you just stop the water going into their home. No problem with that, is there? Unless somehow you figured out that people don't have to drink, then there is a problem. Now, put that in the context of 88 million people living at or below the poverty level, and another 12 to 15 million who are literally having to have a lifestyle of that of an ultra-poor person. And exactly where they're going to come up with the money, if they don't have money for food for 18 million children, where are they going to come up with the money so the kid can take a shower or bath or you have water to cook or for them to drink? Oh, I forgot. That's none of your business. You don't care. All you care about, let them come up with the money. Our children are put at risk with unproven educational methods. A few charter schools with good reviews have functioned with limited enrollments and retention policies favoring likely to succeed individuals and an absence of special needs students. But this violates a precedent underscored by Chief Justice Warren in Brown versus the Board of Education. Quote, education is a right which must be made available to all on equal terms. Charters aren't even close on that. The Louisiana Beliefs Project for example, which will eventually be the country's most extensive voucher system, has only 5,000 slots available for 380,000 eligible students. But corporations are rushing headlong into this lucrative new market anyway, while paying little heed to the body of research confirming their relative ineffectiveness. This includes studies from Stanford University, the Department of Education, Johns Hopkins University, and the RAND Corporation. In addition to their poor performance, most charters are more segregated, less likely to accept students with disabilities, and conducive to a widening of the racial and rich-poor education gaps. Still, despite all the damning evidence, the charter myth persists in the American mind, and it's getting worse. And finally, colleges gradually being replaced with prisons. America has the highest incarceration rate in the world, and despite a falling violent crime rate, more people are going to jail. As explained by Michelle Alexander, quote, federal funding flows to those agencies that increase dramatically the volume of drug arrests, not the agencies most successful in bringing down the bosses, end quote. So as education funding drops again this year in most of the states, spending on prison increases. The U.S. spends over 200% more per prisoner as per public school student. California spends more on prisons than it does on higher education. Well, having the governor that should have been in prison and then spent some time actually with an education, maybe we understand why. The profit motive is hastened with this whole prison privatization. Quickly, from 1990 to 2009, the number of prisoners in private facilities increased by more than 1,600%, from 7,000 to 125,000. Corrections Corporation of America recently offered to run the prison system in any state willing to guarantee the jail stay 90% full. Well, how are you going to guarantee that? Well, then you just, what do you make, dropping a piece of paper, litter on the street, do you make that a prison term? How do you wrap your mind around this whole concept that we should be arresting and imprisoning people so that the private prison system gets its money? And yet studies show that private prisons perform poorly in numerous ways. Prevention of intra-prison violence, jail conditions, rehabilitation efforts. A 10-month investigation concluded, quote, the state's halfway houses have mutated into a shadow corrections network where drugs, gang activity, and violence, including sexual assaults, often go unchecked, end quote. That was the New York Times. Even so, New York Governor Chris Christie insisted that, quote, places like this are to be celebrated. Yeah, sure. Why don't you go and spend a couple weeks celebrating inside of one of the prison cells? How about that, Governor Christie? The U.S. Department of Justice offered this appraisal. Quote, there is no evidence showing that private prisons will have a dramatic impact on how prisons operate. The promises of 20% savings in operational costs have simply not materialized. In conclusion, prisons like public land and utilities and schools are up for sale in America. And yet we, the public, are not paying attention. As a result, we, the public, are going to, I believe, end up having a severe erosion of the commons, the things that we all hold valuable to us, and they shouldn't be turned over to private corporations for profit. I'm Gary Knoll. Let us now take a short break, come back with my guest, Professor Henry Pollack, who's going to talk about the Arctic ice melting more rapidly than imagined, and what is the significance of this and its impacts on the planet and each of us. Please stay with us. Everyone, let us say hello to Professor Henry Pollack. He's been on this program before. He and his colleagues on the Intergovernmental Governmental Panel on Climate Change shared the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize with former Vice President Al Gore. He is a professor emeritus of geophysics at the University of Michigan, where he has taught for over 40 years. And he's just back from the Arctic. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks very much, Gary. It's nice to be on your program again.
Let me read this that just came in this morning. It says, Arctic sea ice will reach final collapse within 4 years. Arctic waters will be completely free, ice-free, within 4 years, according to the leading Arctic ice expert, Professor Peter Wadhams of Cambridge University. Quote, this final collapse of Arctic ice, sea ice, in summer months could occur by 2015, solidifying a, quote, global disaster, which has arrived faster than previous predictions suggested. Wadham has worked for years examining ice thickness data. Quote, the main cause is simply global warming. As the climate is warm, there has been less ice growth during the winter and more ice melt during the summer, he told The Guardian. Quote, climate change is no longer something we can aim to do something about in a few decades, he said, urging that we need to immediately reduce CO2 emissions. Quote, this collapse I predicted would occur in 2015-16, at which time the summer Arctic, meaning August to September, will become ice-free. The final collapse towards that state is now happening and will probably be completed by those dates. End quote. Could you, since you are an expert in the field and you've been to Antarctica, you've been to Arctic, you've been all over the world, you're the author of Uncertain Science, Uncertain World, and your new book, A World Without Ice, which explores how, for the first time in human history, the delicate relationship between human growth and rising industrial economies and what remaining ice there is in the world is at a dangerous precipice. Could you then give us your view, please, on what this actually means to all of us?
Gary, I have a very personal experience in that I just returned from a voyage through the fabled Northwest Passage through the Arctic Ocean. It was a trip from Alaska through the Canadian archipelago and on to Greenland, and our ship encountered almost no ice at all. There was only one day where there was any tricky navigation involved. It took us 3 weeks, and for comparison, when the Northwest Passage was first successfully transited by the famous Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen in 1903 to 1906, it took him 3 years. This year, I did it in 3 weeks. 100 years ago, it took 3 years. So there are really big changes taking place in the sea ice of the Arctic. This year's sea ice extent and thickness were a new record low, and I'm sure that that's what Professor Wadhams was referring to when he made his prediction of a summertime ice-free Arctic Ocean in just a handful of years. It'll mean a lot of big changes in the Arctic, and let me just list a few. The first is that there will just be a lot more commercial shipping that will take advantage of the short route between Europe and North America and Asia across the top of the world. These ships will be full of all kinds of cargo with little experience in the Arctic Ocean, and I expect that we will see some issues associated with just the volume of shipping that we'll try to sneak across in the summer. But another consequence is that there will be increased resource exploration and exploitation. The Arctic Ocean area is thought to hold a considerable amount of petroleum and natural gas, and the opportunity to exploit that is high on the list of nearly every big international oil company. You may have read just this week that Shell is anxious to start about a dozen wells in the Arctic Ocean. They ran into some problems with their environmental safety equipment, which will postpone it for a while, probably until next year. But it's only the the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, or the nose under the tent, because the Russians and the Danes around Greenland, the Canadians and the Americans are all gearing up to do a lot more oil exploitation. This, of course, will lead to a little increase, maybe a major increase, in what I call geopolitical tensions. The question is, who has the rights to the territory of the Arctic? And this is governed, because the Arctic is an ocean, it's governed by the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, which has set out guidelines for territorial ownership. But the United States is not even has never confirmed that treaty. The Senate had an opportunity to confirm it again this summer for the third or fourth time, and again, in its own wisdom or lack thereof, has chosen to turn it down once again. And finally, there's going to be an increase in tourism. There's a lot of interest in expeditionary tourism, adventure tourism into remote areas, and it certainly will be the case that the Arctic islands, Baffin Island in Canada, Ellesmere Island, and Greenland itself, will be seeing an increase of tourism. So it's a really big change that's looming right on the horizon.
One final question. In one of the tipping points, we discussed the concept of the conveyor that brings cold water down and warm water up. Will that be impacted in any way by having so much change in the water temperature as the sea, the Arctic Sea, remains ice-free for a longer period of time?
It's a very good question. And let me just take a second to help your listeners understand that. The ocean circulation in the Atlantic Ocean involves warm water moving north from the equatorial regions into the Arctic via what is called the Gulf Stream. But to make room for that water, you have to have water leaving the Arctic along the bottom of the ocean going south. And that is called the conveyor belt of ocean circulation. What that depends on is that the water has to sink in the Arctic. After arriving on the surface, it has to sink and go back along the bottom of the ocean. And that means that anything that would impede the ocean water sinking in the Arctic would have the potential for disrupting that circulation. Now, as water becomes warmer, it becomes more buoyant, and so the warming of the Arctic Ocean itself would give it additional buoyancy. And also, as more fresh water enters the ocean, it doesn't contain salt, and it also is more buoyant than salt water. And as you are melting the permafrost around the Arctic and some of the glacial ice in Baffin Island and Greenland, you're also freshening the Arctic Ocean. And so there's two factors that are making it harder for the ocean water to sink and maintain the big Atlantic Ocean circulation. When that might turn off is not so clear. People are making observations of the ocean to see if there's any slowing, and so far we've not seen that. But it is a concern because in the geological record, we know that it's happened twice before in the last 15,000 years. I think one in between 11 and 12,000 years ago, and another around 8,000 years ago, when there were big influxes of fresh water as the last ice from the last ice age melted and returned to the ocean. So that would be a big change, a very big change in the climate of the North Atlantic area, because all of Western Europe depends on the heat of the Gulf Stream to keep it a moderate climate.
That would certainly be a life changer for many people in that area, because that could drop the temperature down 8-10 degrees, which would really adversely affect the plants and growing seasons in that area.
Absolutely. If you look at a map, you'll note that Western Europe is at about the same latitude as Hudson Bay in Canada, and it's only because of the Gulf Stream that it has a moderate climate. If that heat transport conveyor belt were to stop, Western Europe would be much more like Central Canada, and our good friends in Western Europe would not be at all pleased.
Mm. I appreciate the good work that you always do, and thank you once again for coming on and enlightening us on this little newsmaker segment. It's important.
Thanks for having me again, Gary. I enjoy very much helping to let the public know what's happening in these remote parts of the world.
Thank you. Professor Henry Pollack, Nobel Prize winner and author of A World Without Ice. I'm Gary Nall, and we're going to take your calls on our callback segment, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm going to take some of those calls. I will go to the top myths about Iran's nuclear enrichment program in the last 5 minutes of our show. Yesterday, sorry, ran over into the next program by a few minutes, but I wanted to answer some questions. And so we have 4 minutes now, just a couple program announcements. I will be starting in January or February, if we have enough qualified people, a program specifically involving lifestyle behavior modification for those suffering with and diagnosed with Alzheimer's illness. It is free. It's a public service. It's not medical. But I believe that if we have enough people and help them, it can be a new model of helping millions upon millions of people who will be suffering and are suffering dementia and Alzheimer's in the future. And you can send the complete medical records to Gary Nall, 2307 Broadway, New York, 10024. Separately, thank you. Two people sent us films from our 30 years of dance parties that we've done to celebrate being on the air. And I took a look at them, and we're putting them up. They're both up as of today. Please keep in mind these are just homemade movies, and they do the editing and filming. But you get to see what it was like. I want to tell you some of the outfits. Ooh, the mid-1980s, a little dated, but the energy was not. It was very positive. So you can go to Gary Nall TV on the YouTube and watch the dance parties. And if you have any of those films, please send them over to my office and we'll put them up. And finally, for those who are seeking help and with non-terminal conditions, I have 4 people I've hired who work full-time, all with different backgrounds, from PhDs in psychology to certified nutritionists and dietitians. They're all there to help you free as a public service with your needs. Just call 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000. Let's say hello to Rick from White Plains. Hi, Rick.
I've been listening to you forever. I have to confess I only caught the very tail end of this guest because I just got my lunch break from work. But I wanted to ask a question regarding some of the ice cores that they're stored at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory over in Rockland County. That's the Columbia facility. I've had the opportunity to look at some of them, and they raise a lot of interesting questions about the temperature fluctuations on this planet going way back. And there were also a lot of questions raised about when the Vikings first found Greenland, how green it was, and I'm not a denier of anthropogenic global warming, but I wouldn't even say I'm a skeptic, but I do think there are a lot of questions raised about the solar cycles.
You are correct. There have been cycles throughout history where not according to any human influence that the cycles warmed up. What we're referring to is the unequivocal and absolutely overwhelming scientific preponderance of information and scientific evidence of human and industrial age input over the last 100 years. When you have the hottest summer on record, the hottest year on record, and 8 of the 10 warmest years on record in the last 12 years, that is not a natural cycle. That's man-made. Now the issue is not, is global warming real? It is. It's what can we do about it? tomorrow, I'll do an in-depth analysis of what we can do to stop eating meat to make a major difference on that. That's 18% of all of the CO2 emissions come from methane, which is actually more toxic and more warming than regular CO2. But we can do something about that. There's still time if we do it now. Thank you. I appreciate your call. We're going to be off WBAI and all the other stations and KPFK and PFW in Washington and all the other stations around the United States in about 60 seconds. But I'm continuing on, taking calls and going to do top myths about Iran's nuclear enrichment program. So at least when you hear the Netanyahu's and the other people supporting why we should invade Iran, you'll have some counterbalance. Let us go back to our calls and let's just take another call here. Vicky from New Jersey. Hi, Vicky.
Hello?
Or Vic. Hi, Vic.
Yes, Vic. Yes. My question stems from listening to the commentary hour the other day about methane extinction and also today's program. Has there been any official reaction from some of these companies that, you know, who are looking to drill in the Arctic, shipping companies who are, you know, anticipating the new passage, to the east, whatever. Has there been reactions from these companies? Are they looking forward to this, or are they? Is there any trepidation?
No, they're fully looking forward to it for a simple reason. Right now, we are in the extreme energy sources. Hence, we are past peak oil. We're into post-peak oil as an economy. So all the low-hanging fruit of the sweet refined oils are gone. So they have to go deeper into the oceans, into the Gulf, and into rare areas to do their exploration. That's very expensive, but they have the subsidies and they have the bank accounts and the credit lines to do it. But if there's an accident, remember, in the Gulf, there were tens of thousands of volunteers. It was easy to get to. There were roads and planes. In the Arctic, there's no roads. There's no planes. There's no voluntary force. The seabed is shallow, and as a result, if there's an accident, there's no way to clean it up. Thank you, Vic. Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann. Time for one call.
Hi there, Gary. I've had a couple of people emailing me. They say that all over the news now, they're saying that real estate is getting better, and this is a great time to buy a home, and they're kind of hesitating until they get your thumbs up on this, because they're not clear about whether or not this is actually a good time for them to invest in a house.
Have you ever heard of the person that would go into a store and say, my God, that diamond ring, which was $100,000, is now only $50,000. What a steal. Well, there's no steal. The diamond ring probably cost someone about $100. Understand that we had anywhere from 100% to 1,000%, depending upon the property and its location, overvaluation of the real estate market. We have not hit bottom. We have not even corrected to the pre-level yet. The trouble is that we had about a $10 trillion takeout economy, meaning people are taking out the equity in their homes, so the value of the properties went up. Here's what you have to understand. I do not recommend buying any home at this time, because the dollar is going, I believe, to collapse over the next 2 years. And that means the value of what you're going to be buying will go down. The cost to buy it will go up. Secondly, I also believe that that we will see an additional 30% reduction in real estate over the next 2 years. And lastly, the banks and mortgage companies are holding in shadow reserves over 5 million homes and apartments that have been foreclosed on, that if they put them on the market, the value of all the real estate would come substantially down. So you may think you're getting a good bargain. There was a house worth $400,000. You're paying $300,000. What a great deal. You're saving $100,000. That's what it looks like. But how much is the house really going to be worth in 5 years? Probably $100,000. So that's where people are making the mistake. They're seeing the discounts and thinking now's the time. We're 2 years away to 3 years away from seeing the market bottom out. Okay, hope that answers that. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Now, stay tuned for UTreeSlade. ¶¶